Welcome to the NCMC podcast series, and today I'm going to be interviewing Joe Belmont, who is a guitar teacher at the Community Music Center and also does their jazz program, or used to do the jazz program when there wasn't a pandemic. I guess that's fair to say. Were you teaching guitar as well individually, or just as the
Oh no, not at NCMC.
NCMC. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How long have the jazz classes been going on?
Yeah, you know, I think for 20 years.
20 years.
At least. Actually, they brought me in there to do that, and what happened was there wasn't a music teacher at the Northampton High School running any kind of jazz program or any classes. So NCMC did it, and they got a grant from somewhere or another for a year. And it was kind of awesome because all these kids from the high school signed up, like 12 of them, and it was basically free. So it was really a great way to start.
That's interesting because I'm not sure if you know this, but when Bill Feinstein founded the Music Center, a lot of his motivation was that there wasn't any music program in the schools. So it started out as a class for high school kids, and then you added, but you do as adult class as well, right?
Right. And I think it took me maybe a couple of years, maybe the third year I did it, I added the adults, you know? And so what was typical over there usually was to have kind of an adult beginner ensemble, a more advanced adult ensemble, a kind of beginner youth ensemble, and then a more advanced youth ensemble.
So you actually had three?
Usually it was either three or four wow. classes. Yeah.
That must have kept you busy. When we say jazz ensemble, the word jazz actually covers so many different styles of music that it almost doesn't mean anything. And so if somebody's coming into your class to learn jazz, how do you think about that? What kind of jazz do you teach them?
Well, you know, that's really interesting. It's an interesting observation because, you know, what's happened over time, all of these American genres, sort of blend into each other eventually. The way it's gone pretty much now, though, is we kind of do it as what I would consider a kind of a pretty standard definition of jazz. We do, you know, the jazz standards, swing style, bebop, but also we do stuff like blues, you know, few introductory blues songs. We have, a few funk songs, but, you know, that's kind of really considered within the jazz repertoire. Then we do some of the more modern stuff. We had a few Chick Corea songs, Pat Metheny, things like that.
Does it sometimes vary on what the students are interested in? Or
oh, absolutely. Yeah. No. I would have generally have the students pick some of the songs. I pick some of the songs, you know. What happened was by the time we were ending, we had a very, very advanced youth ensemble the last year. And I just sent you a few of the recordings they did, which were outstanding. You know, the group was great. And these kids are like really interested in jazz. You know, they're really interested in music in general. And they had a lot of ideas about what they wanted to play.
How does their taste tend to run in the various shades of jazz that there are?
Well, right. I mean, I have to admit, I sort of steered it a lot, you know, but uh-huh. These kids were like really doing jazz the same way I learned it in the 1980s, basically pretty much what I would consider the jazz idiom. And, you know, it's funny, though. I mean, it's true. Like they liked some of the new bands like Snarky Puppy and people like that, who I really haven't heard that much, although I think they're really good, you know. So we didn't steer towards that, but we always do some soul jazz and some R&B jazz, things like that, you know, and basically, you know, I made sure that of all of the kids in the ensemble that we were always playing at least one of the songs each of them, you know, really wanted to play, you know.
What is your own taste in jazz? Which guitarists do you find most inspirational, and which period of jazz do you find the most inspirational?
Well, yeah, that, I mean, that's kind of interesting. It's really an interesting question, you know, Joe, because you know this about me, right? I've played in rock bands and country bands and fusion, and I've played straight ahead jazz bands. So basically, you know, for my own band, you know, what we were playing was, you know, kind of what I like, you know. I suppose, you know, I'm a big fan of the real standard jazz stuff from the 50s, you know, the Miles Davis, John Coltrane kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
For guitar players, I mean, love George Benson, love Kenny Burrell. But I also a big Pat Metheny fan, you know. You know, and I write a lot of original music too, you know. So that's kind of where I'm at. But as far as the jazz group at NCMC is concerned, I really do kind of, I suppose I defined it a little bit narrowly, I have to admit, you know. And, you know, we've been doing mostly stuff that's, you know, really within the jazz idiom.
Uh-huh. What elements should a tune have in order to for it to be called jazz?
Oh, you know, this is deep here. Exactly. You know, yeah, right. That's where it gets really troublesome. You know, I think you know it when you hear it, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, initially, like if you were looking for a definition of jazz in the 1950s, you'd say it had a swing beat. You'd say, you know, you could even say, you know, the drummer is like, the bass is walking on quarters, you know, that sort of thing. Uh-huh. That's very straight ahead jazz, swing jazz. And that's kind of what really the definition at that time was. It's not anymore, you know. And I suppose what ended up happening was in the 1960s and 70s, it really, the straight ahead stuff became a lot more eclectic because it assimilated a lot of the Brazilian styles, Latin styles. So yeah, Brazilian styles, Afro-Cuban styles, but then also stuff from the guitar world, you know, R&B, funk, even reggae. There's reggae jazz, which I would say, at least to me, is straight ahead, you know.
Uh-huh.
You expect chord changes in jazz, but not always. Some of it can be modal, you know, as well. So I suppose it really does get a little bit hard to define at a certain time.
You know that old joke about what's the difference between a rock guitarist and a jazz guitarist?
Oh, no. Well, I'd probably do both.
Well, the rock guitarist, you see, plays three chords in front of thousands of people. The jazz guitarist, on the other hand,
plays thousands of chords in front of three people, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I mean, I you know, the stats would definitely say that, you know. But I want to do add, you know, for the musicians out there, I kind of feel as a guitar player, I mean, I'm like very eclectic. And, you know, for instance, I've been putting a lot of my originals up on YouTube, you know, over COVID, you know, now that the band isn't playing. And I've been starting to get really successful at this, you know, like I'm getting thousands of views every month. I feel like in a way for me and for guitar, it can be a way of developing skill. You know, it's a skill development. And I found that, you know, for the kids too, for the youth ensemble, it's like a lot of these kids are going to go on and or do play in rock bands and who knows what else, bluegrass. I mean, you know, like all kinds of music, you know, that they do. Unbelievable. Like the youth today, like have so many different styles and they're very comfortable with it. And I felt very comfortable with the idea that, you know, having this kind of structured, coached ensemble was just helpful for them in terms of giving them direction, having them, you know, to learn how to take direction and also, you know, develop the skills, develop their own playing, you know, at the same time.
So why don't you describe to us how your classes work, and you're talking about giving structure to them, so that kind of leads into that question. So what are the classes like when you have them?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, basically, the truth of it is I want them to be as much playing as possible. So we'll probably spend every class 5 or 10 minutes on music theory or arrangemental stuff. We'll usually have a new song every week, you know, and then I want them to play their repertoire. Oh, yes. Okay. Jazz, the definition of jazz, at least for me in a small group setting, it's really important that it has improvisation in it. Okay. At least for me, that's a definition, part of the definition. So essentially we get this kind of bare bones arrangement together, you know, of these songs. And, you know, the kids have got the arrangement. The arrangement lasts about a minute or something. And then they all have their improvising, you know. So that's the most of the class. We have some music theory. Then the other thing is, over the years, I've developed a bunch of games to do, like teaching people to trade four measures at a time with each other, or certain ways to structure the improvisations where, you know, for instance, if in the form, you know, we would have the rhythm section go through a set of changes where, you know, maybe they're playing in like a cut time or halftime feel, and then for one time through, and then they'll go into the full feel, quarter time feel, and then kind of build things up like that. But I always want it to be as much playing as possible, because that gives people a chance. Well, you know, for one thing, to have fun and interact with each other.
So you mentioned improvisation, and you know, I think improvisation is a huge kind of hurdle to a lot of players who, particularly kids that started reading notes out of the book. Could you describe your approach as to how you get kids to learn how to improvise?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So I guess what it is, I've developed over the years kind of like certain tunes that are just easy to do, you know? And so what I'll encourage people to do is, you know, just let's say there's a song that can be improvised easily with. So let's say there's a certain scale, like a major scale or probably easier blues scale, you know? So we'll have a song that where you can take a solo, where it is all you need to do is to experiment along with staying either in a diatonic scale or in a blues scale. And I kind of take the approach, try to say to people, look, just give it a try, you know, see what you can. And, you know, it's funny. I feel like for most people, when they give it a try, it kind of starts to happen. And so I kind of believe in the idea of starting that way, you know, in other words, from inspiration and just kind of letting it happen. And then once, you know, people are already getting that going a little bit, then, you know, of course, there's a lot of ways to develop that.
Yeah. Anyone who's been to a blues jam has heard a lot of really bad solos that just kind of follow diatonic scales that aren't very interesting. So it's hard to get the next step to turn it into something that makes sense or is more interesting to listen to.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a tough thing. I mean, you know, the thing that I've learned, because, you know, the blues is such a big influence on my own playing. And the thing that you realize over the years is blues is really a very defined idiom, even more so than jazz, you know. So it's really strung together in licks and styles, you know. My encouragement would be to, you know, once you're playing already and experimenting, and sometimes people can do beautiful things like that, but then, you know, you've got to learn the language, I think, you know.
So a lot of it would be learning the licks. If you learn the licks that are typical, that would help you to build a solo that made sense.
Absolutely. So, and yes, that's right. And another really good idea, this is something we do down at NCMC, is we'll take a lick, you know, and then, you know, like we'll get everyone to play it. And then, you know, the idea of experimenting with the idea of like, okay, when you take your solo, start to play this lick and then see if you can repeat it and see if you can play half of it or see where then it leads next, what it develops to. But that's the easiest way to kind of get into the pocket, you know, is to have, you know, to have some of these themes to play. Now in jazz, what's helpful sometimes is in the head, you know, so we say playing the head in jazz, that's jazz talk. It means, you know, how does the song go?
Well, the basic melody, right?
Right, the basic melody. So in the basic melody, hopefully that's got ideas that you can use, you know, for improvisation.
Right. Do you find if you just start off with trading fours, that having only four measures to fill makes it easier for somebody to come up with something?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm not sure, because, you know, the fours are, is we do this all the time, right? So that's a pretty standard thing in jazz, like famously at the end of the song, after everyone's kind of jammed and after the bass solo, you know, if there is a bass solo, and then you trade fours with the drums, right? Which is a real standard thing. I'm not sure about that. I see where you're coming from with that. And then sometimes we'll trade the fours, just like throwing it around the room, like just going from one melodic layer to another. I think the kids enjoy building off of each other's ideas that way, you know, which is really good. Something that I try to teach these groups, by the way, right from the beginning, which I think is a kick, because I really do buy into the idea that jazz is about improvisation. To me, it's kind of a wacky thing, but if you think about it, in jazz, one of the given ideas is really once the jamming starts, everyone's part is improvised. I mean, it's sort of an outstanding part of how I would describe the idiom. You know, if you think about it, if you're playing in the rock band or a pop band, you could have improvised solos, but it might very well be that, you know, the accompaniment parts that the bass or the drums or the keyboard or whatever is playing is pretty static. It's pretty set. In jazz, the arrangements in small group jazz, hopefully, at least for me, hopefully are not set. So what I really try to do very early on with these groups is say, okay, my goal is, you know, in the beginning, I'll direct you here. You take a solo, you play the head, you do this. You know, once we start, can you find your way through the tune and, you know, come up with a rendition, you know, of it that's now, you know, new, you know?
You'd still want the bass and drums to follow the basic form of the song, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think in jazz, within staying in the basic form, there can be a lot of improvisation in terms of what happens. And I think that's part of the fun of it. I think it's fun music to play.
Right. I assume you always have a bass player and a guitar. I mean, a bass player and a drummer, and you have to have those. Do you always have students for that, or sometimes do you have ringers come in and do that?
Yeah, I mean, so right. I realized that after a while, and yeah, we would have ringers. So it's really important, because sometimes, you know, with the sign up, it just doesn't sign up that way, you know. So what was really cool was, I kind of developed a whole stable of just friends of mine. Actually, to tell you the truth, guys I played gigs with over the years. I know Keith Leverell used to come down for years and play drums, you know. That we had a good adult ensemble then, and he would just play with that. And we just never had a drummer on that level, and he really enjoyed it. And John Cocozina used to come down and play. So, yeah, I think that was when I had that realization that was important to get a rhythm section.
Do you ever play bass or drums in the group?
Yeah. Oh, and that was really fun for me, you know, because what happened was, I think I learned a lot from that, honestly, was what would happen is on a given day, you know, kids wouldn't show up, or, you know, that's always going to happen, which can be really great, actually, sometimes really special sessions. You know, you're missing somebody, but if I had to fill in on drums or bass, I would do that. And I got really accustomed to doing that. And I really felt like learning the bass helped my guitar playing a lot, because it really got me used to just always laying it down and following the changes without going too far away from it. So it's really helpful for me now, because I'm doing all my own recording at home, multi-track. And I've gotten a lot savvier on the drums and the bass, and that's a lot of fun. I like that.
You don't play horns as well, though, I assume.
No, not at all. No. Yeah.
So how difficult is it to coach an instrument that you, to coach a band that has an instrument that you don't play?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's hard for me, you know, because again, it's just a band and I can listen to what they're playing and, you know, I feel happy to chip in. But on the other hand, you know, usually the people who are playing, you know, are taking taking lessons on the side, you know? So for instance, I wouldn't be able to say to a sax player how to get a better tone or how to play in tune, you know, but I certainly feel happy or, you know, in getting them involved with being able to play with the group.
Are you still, nobody's gigging a lot right now, but before the pandemic hit, were you still, did you have a group that you were gigging with?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually kind of sad because what happened with me was I had just released a CD. The group was the Joe Belmont Experience, and I was playing with great players, really great musicians. And sadly enough, I really had booked just a huge number of gigs for the spring and summer, a year ago, you know. So as COVID started coming in, after a while, I began to realize, you know, we're not going to do any of this, are we? You know, it was the COVID thing. It really took everyone. It took myself a while to catch on to what was going on, you know.
Same with me.
Yeah, I mean, so when you said you wanted to interview me, you know, I wrote some notes down and it made me pause a little bit to just kind of think about what had happened, you know, because I mean, I did this for like 20 years. I think I did it for more than 20 years at Northampton Community Music Center. And I have to say, I'm very proud of the center, the music center. And I realize now with this jazz program, you know, we've had hundreds of people who have done it and are kind of alumni. And among the adults, I think there's several local groups around who are just, you know, got started at NCMC, met each other, and they're still playing. And I know among the youth groups, you know, these kids are now in Nashville, they're in you know, certainly the group last year is going to be in college. So I think it's something that we at the Music Center can be very proud of because I feel like it's been a good experience and it's been a good experience for me.
Right. So some of your students have gone on to become professional musicians.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, because I think what started happening with the youth groups in the last 5 or 10 years is, you know, there's a very limited number of high school kids who are really into jazz in a big way. But those that are, they really are, you know. Uh-huh. And so, for instance, in the group, our last group, you know, that is reflected of those recordings. The recordings, by the way, sound fabulous, almost shockingly good. But they're it seems like they're going on, I think pretty much all of them, but certainly three or four of them are going on to study music at college. And they're very good musicians already.
Well, that's great that you can point to that, how you and the Music Center have inspired these kids to stay with it and get better and become professionals. So I think I've asked you all the things that I wanted to ask you about. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. It's been really interesting to hear about this class.
Well, Joe, thanks for doing this. All right, nice to talk to you.
Take care. Yeah, bye-bye. Yeah. We're going to go out listening to a little bit more of Joe Belmont's original Unity Village guitar composition.